stay locked in through thick and thin. And athletes constantly are wavering. Their confidence is always up and down. You know, you're comparing yourself to your peers and you're going, oh, I'm better than that guy. And then you go to a bigger tournament and you realize, oh, these guys are all better than me. And so you're constantly measuring yourself.
He's internationally known as one of the lead performance enhancement specialists in the world. Paul's innovative and scientific approach to training has made the PJF Performance the authority in basketball specific performance training. Paul is the personal performance trainer for numerous NBA players. I'm so excited to have him on. We're going to be speaking about what it means to be an NBA player, how you can get yourself to perform better and to get into that kind of headspace so you can become an elite basketballer one day. We're going to talk about science-based approach to training, his vertical jump method. We're going to go into mindset, nutrition, and very, very excitingly, we're going to be speaking about coaching and what it means to be a coach and how he built his world-class brand online. So ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Paul to the Neuro Experience Podcast.
I've been following your journey, and now that with NeuroAthletics, we're getting very much into the basketball space, and this is why I'm so excited to pick your brain. You're very scientific. All the knowledge that you have and all the content that you share is backed up by science, and that's why I'm so excited to interview you. But look, before we get into it, can you please give us a brief rundown on who you are, how'd you get into it, and everything about you?
Yeah, so I grew up an athlete. I grew up a basketball player, coming from Flagstaff, Arizona, small town, northern Arizona. Played basketball my entire life. Got good on the skill side, shooting, dribbling, passing, but I just never had the athleticism. I never had that physical component. I was always undersized. I'm 5'11", which in the basketball world is not very big. And so I always had to go above and beyond and study the body and figure out, how do I get stronger? How do I jump higher? How do I get faster? Because for me, I was going on all of these recruitment trips, and the coaches, all the head coaches of these D1 schools, they're saying the same thing. Look, your skill is incredible. We just don't know if you can hang physically at this level. And so I decided to just study as much as I could, even starting in high school, and just apply it to myself. I ended up going to a year of junior college, and I got hurt there. Then I took an entire year off, and that's when I really locked in, started to get some personal trainer certifications, just because I was interested in it. And through that, I was learning more and more and applying it to myself. And then I put 12 inches on my vertical in that year off.
Yeah.
And after I did that, I basically went from barely touching the rim to full windmill dunks. I was doing 360 dunks the next year. And, I didn't know what I was going to do as far as playing, but I just put a little YouTube video up. My friend took a little video, low quality video with a BlackBerry, and I was doing windmill dunks and showing off all my new bounce. And a bunch of coaches saw that video on YouTube, and I ended up going to Northern Arizona, back to where I was from. It's a Division I school. Northern Arizona University. I ended up going back there and playing my junior year there.
That's so interesting, because you speak a lot about how Instagram and YouTube were the platforms that really got you out there for NBA players to see you, for coaches to see you.
Yeah, no, it's been everything. It's funny because I had no expectation of that. I figured I was just putting something out just to kind of show people the transformation that I made, and it kind of just went viral. Coaches started finding me, blogs started writing about me and posting the video. And so that was kind of my initial taste with how powerful social media is. And this is a while back. This is before Instagram. So it was nowhere near as powerful as it is today. I kind of took that same approach with my business, scaling on Instagram. But anyways, let me go back. So I was playing there and I got hurt, and I started to realize that I might not be an NBA player as I once thought. I might be able to get healthy and go overseas and try to continue my career, or I came up with this great system that helped me transform my vertical. And I'm wondering in the back of my head if I could do this for a bunch of other kids and help them. And so I just started training kids for free on the side in the community. I'd go to the park. I'd go into my old high school. I wouldn't even charge. I would just do free sessions, and kids were getting great results. So I then had a decision to make: either go back for my senior year or just scale this bigger and just make it into a business. And I decided to go that route. So I moved to Tempe and I opened up a gym. It wasn't my own gym, but I paid rent at an existing independent facility. And I just started training from there, and it really started to blow up. And this is right around the time that Instagram came out. And I started posting a video to Instagram every day. Ball handling tips, vertical jump tips, describing the science behind everything. And it just took off. At one point, I was gaining well over 1,000 followers a day. And then from that, a bunch of NBA players and GMs and scouts started finding me. And so I was still a senior finishing up at Arizona State, and I already had NBA players flying in to train with me. So I basically had a full-on NBA training business going while I was still in college. And then after college, once I graduated, I decided to make the move because I was doing well and I was comfortable, and I could have continued to do well in Arizona, but I knew I had a cap. Most of the NBA players stay in Los Angeles in the off season. So I knew if I wanted to take this to the place where I want to, I'm going to have to move to the big city. And so I moved to Los Angeles, and now I have my gym out here in Anaheim. And so once I got out here, it was definitely a good decision. We started getting more and more players, big names, guys like James Harden. And so, yeah, it's been pretty crazy. The past four summers, we've been training 20 plus NBA players every summer. So yeah, that's where we're at now.
That's unbelievable. How would you describe yourself? Would you describe yourself as a skills coach, or are you directly involved just with the vertical jump? Like what are you known for?
Yeah. So that's the interesting part. I'm most known for vertical jump. I'm most known as like a strength and conditioning performance specialist. People, when they want to improve their athleticism or prevent injuries, they come to me. But I also do skills training as well, because I played for so long and I still study the game. There's certain cases where I'll do the skills training as well. So I'll basically be the one-stop shop for guys. Sometimes they already have a skills trainer, or sometimes I'm just not a good fit with their specific position. So I'll just do their performance and strength, but I do have the ability to do both. And either way, it really helps me because I can kind of bridge that gap. Because a lot of people, they get these results in strength and conditioning, and then they do their skills training separate, and it never ends up translating. And so since I understand the game at that level, I can really enhance their results and make sure that everything that we're doing in the weight room is actually going to translate to the court.
And like you've been there and done that. So that's, you know, you were in the position, you were an elite athlete yourself, and you're a basketball player. Now you're coaching. What do you think is the biggest, like, for people who want to go to the NBA, do you think you need to start with the skills at a young age, or is it more of a talent, you know, a raw talent you're born with it thing?
Yeah, so it's a huge combination. I mean, there's a lot of NBA players who are there because they just have the talent. They're 6'8", they got long arms, and they're naturally athletic, and they're skilled enough. And so that makes up, you know, close to half the NBA. And then I think the other half is just guys who maybe didn't have those same genetics, but they just went all out and they became so skilled, and they got everything out of their athleticism, and they see the game the right way. They have a high IQ. And so it's about half and half, but either way, I think as a young kid, what you really need to do is you got to start working on your skills, as soon as possible. There's no, you got to wait until you're 10 years old. I mean, if you're 2 years old, you want to have a ball in your hand. You want to start playing on the little tykes hoop. You want to start developing a love for the game. That's the number one thing. Is all these parents now are like, yeah, I'm going to get my kid to the NBA, and they just try to make them do a bunch of drills. Well, that's not going to make them fall in love with the game. But if these young kids can truly fall in love with the game and become a student and really watch basketball, a lot of that is going to stick, especially at a young age. Our brains have such that an ability to change. When you really watch a lot of high level basketball and you develop a love for the game and you go get competitive with your friends and you play, you can really develop a ton of skill at a very young age, which I really recommend doing it that way instead of just doing a bunch of drills. And then you're going to get into middle school. And then from there, yeah, you can start to really sharpen up on your drills, start doing a more strength and conditioning, even if it's just like body weight stuff, just so that you can start to take the forces on the court and stay nice and healthy. And yeah, eventually it's going to basically become a full-time job by high school. You're going to be year round. You're going to be playing club. They give these guys no breaks at this point. So you're basically, you train like you're an NBA player when you're in high school now.
Mm. So, you know, given everything that you've just said, you from age 16, sometimes you can be given a full-time job where you're training as an elite athlete. How important is mindset from a young age to really develop and hone in on skills such as confidence, negative thought stopping, you know, really knowing who you are and gaining self-awareness? How important do you think that is for a player?
Oh, it's huge. It's everything. I mean, the mentality of the guys that we train who are elite, it's just on a whole nother level. Their confidence is just unwavering. Like when things go bad, they'll go 0 for 15 shooting, and it's like nothing happened. It's like then they have a short term memory. The next day they bounce back and they're the same superstar that they were before. Whereas the other 90% of the NBA, they're all going to fold. I mean, they're going to have that off session and then they're wondering, or that off game, and now they're wondering what went wrong, what's going on with my form. And they start getting internal and they start thinking that something's wrong with them. And then that triggers an entire slump. Whereas that the best players, they just have a very, very short term memory. They're very, very good at being present, whether it's a workout, a practice, or a game, they're fully there. They're not thinking about the past. They're not thinking about the future. But yeah, I mean, the mental component is so important, especially just things like confidence, which confidence, yeah, it could be a reminder of, hey, I got to be confident. But for me, it's mostly coming from preparation. So like our guys that feel like they're prepared and they did the right things in the off season, all of a sudden their confidence is through the roof in season because they're stepping on the court knowing that they're more prepared than their opponent. So I think that the confidence side is just going to come from your preparation. But you do, I think you do have to take a step back and give yourself reminders that you've got to be confident, got to play confident.
You know, I always say that because people just look at, you know, a LeBron, a Kobe Bryant, and just think that they are, you know, skills, and it's like they're a business. They are very intelligent. I think to get to that level, and this is in my perspective, you can't just have the physical attributes. You've really got to be an intelligent player, an intelligent athlete. You need to know when to perform, like when to, you know, how to think fast, what to do, like how to speak in front of an audience. It really comes down to a well-rounded athlete. So I'm so happy that you said that.
Let's go
into like the science stuff that you do, because I'm really interested to find out if you use equipment. Like, do you use like science-based equipment to help with your measuring, with your data to improve performance?
Yeah, so that's a big thing that we're known for is our initial assessment. So when we get guys in, first thing that we do your typical body fat test, your typical combine test to find out your speed and your vertical. But that stuff tells you where you're at, but it doesn't tell you why you're there. So we could see your vertical and say, okay, you jumped 35 inches. Well, why? That knowing that you jumped 35 inches doesn't do anything for our training. So what we do is we go a step deeper and we'll do motion tracking, EMG, and force plates. So like with force plates, now we're going to test your vertical on the plate, and then it's going to give us the ground reaction forces, which basically will show us exactly how you accomplished that jump. So did you load well on the way down? Did you transition out of the bottom really well? Did you hold force for a long time on the way up? Is it a high force to body weight ratio? There's so many different, you know, are we balanced between the left and the right foot, or are we producing more force from the right leg? So there's a bunch of different data points that we can look at there. And that really helps set up our training, because every athlete has a limiting factor to their explosiveness. They just have no idea. We've had people with 50-inch verticals that we've got on the force plate and determined that there's probably something that's actually still limiting that we could improve. And so we would never know that without going to that depth. But yeah, so we do the force plates. We'll do motion tracking. So that's basically we hook guys up to sensors and then we have them do a series of movements and we can tell all of the joint angles. We could tell how much velocity they're producing at each joint. So like in your vertical jump, how's your knee velocity compared to your hip velocity? If your knee velocity was low, then we know that that's something that we could focus on in training. So we can always just look, break it down to the individual joints. And then with EMG, that electromyography, basically it measures when the muscle is contracting, how hard it's contracting. So then that can give us insight into what your limiting factor is from a muscular level. So a lot of guys, like they're quad dominant, and when they jump or when they run, they're not using their glutes enough. And if you're extremely quad dominant, then you're probably going to get some knee pain, whether that's an immediate injury or just pain over time. And so for those guys, we know that we should probably take you off the court for a while and let's strengthen up your glutes and then teach you a good hip hinge pattern. And now all of a sudden when you're landing and when you're cutting and when you're running, you're using your glutes more and more. And so now that force is evenly distributed. So the EMG is a huge part to our assessment. And then other than that, we go more on the subjective side of, I just want to get to know them. I like to see them play one-on-one. I like to see how they move. I look at all of their film. I go to all of their YouTube interviews. I want to know who they are as a person. What are their interests? Because you can do all of this science stuff. You could have the perfect plan, but if you don't get the buy-in, you don't get any results. And so the buy-in is number one. And the only way to get the buy-in, especially with a high-level player, because everybody's trying to be part of their process. So how do you get that buy-in? You have to meet them halfway, and they have to know that you care. So it doesn't matter, what's the quote? It doesn't matter how much you know, it matters that you care. Mm-hmm. And so that's the number one thing. The guys got to know that you're there for them. And the only way to do that is to kind of know who they are and speak to them specifically. And so you can't have a one size fits all approach in how you deliver the program and how you interact with guys. So that's a huge part of our assessment, is just finding out who they are as a person.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you, because I think that with all of the athletes that we onboard with NeuroAthletics, I find that the more touch points we give them, we make sure we want to know them better than they know themselves, so we can know their brain and how they operate. But something that works well with us is we have a lot of touch points, meaning we check up on them, constantly. We don't have one of those, you sign up to the program and you can only see us once. We're basically there for them 24/7 if anything happens, because when you do that, you have trust. And when you have trust, you have the ability to help them, and then you get them to perform better.
Right.
I really believe in that. But with the EMG, it was interesting, because I think that would help you well with seeing if any athletes are going to be injured, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Well, all of them can really help us tell. Force plates are huge for injury prevention, because like I said, one of the major injury risks is left-right imbalances. And so we could even see like how you're landing. Are you landing too stiff-legged? Are you landing too much on your right leg? So there's a lot of different variables with that. The motion tracking allows us to see exactly how you're moving. And then, like you said, the EMG can tell us when you have an overactive or an underactive muscle. So sometimes it's not underactive. It's not like you can't fire it, but sometimes you fire it too hard. So like you're going into a jump and then we find out that you fire your quads at 130%. And that means you're basically 30% above the muscle activity that you would do in an isometric. So like if I just pushed against your ankle as hard as you could and you extended your knee, like going into knee extension as hard as you could, that'll measure the peak. That'll measure the max amount that muscle can contract. And then you get guys to go jump, and a lot of times it's like 130, 140% of that, which shows us you're getting way too much out of the quads. And so you're going to get an injury. It's just a matter of when. So yeah, the EMG is huge. It's huge for us.
And how about nutrition? Do you put a lot of emphasis on that? Because there's, you know, it's very controversial, you know, what to eat, when to eat, how to eat. But are you focused more so on the quality of food, or are you focused on body fat percentage?
Yeah, both. So we usually get guys in with dietitians or nutritionists, and they kind of set up the initial plan. But since I'm the one that's kind of in the trenches day to day, I end up almost not taking over, but I'm the one who's sitting there reminding them every day and changing things, because our workouts change day to day. You know, we assume a guy's going to be feeling good. Sometimes he might come in not feeling so good, and now we got to adjust on the fly. So there's a lot of times where I'll take my program and completely rip it up and do something different. And because of that, his nutritional strategies would change for that day. And mm-hmm. So instead of calling the nutritionist, that would be my job to step up and say, okay, well, this is what we're going to do. So yeah, the nutrition side is huge. Body fat, obviously we want to keep a low body fat for our guys. We're not going to go too crazy with it, because you want to have a little bit of body fat to be healthy. That's one mistake that players make, is they think leaner is better. For the vertical jump, that might be true, but for health, it's not. For healthy joints, it's not necessarily good to be extremely low body fat. You're going to start to get sore joints. Immune system is going to be compromised. So every guy has a certain body fat percentage where they're going to play the best at and be the most healthy. We want to find that, and then we want to get them there. And half the battle for getting them there is the nutrition side. I mean, they're going to burn a lot of calories on the court. They're going to burn calories in the weight room. And so basketball players traditionally have just eaten like crap and then still overcome it because they're so active on the court. And genetically, they usually have long, thin, lean bodies. But when we really tune up that nutrition, it can make a huge difference. Even if the guy doesn't have body fat problems and they're the type that could eat just about anything, they internally, it changes them. They feel better. They feel more energy, so they can get more workouts per day. And so the nutrition is going to have a huge effect on their performance.
Yeah. And mindset as well.
Mm-hmm.
So for sure. Now that we've spoken, you know, it seems like to be at that level, at that NBA level where millions of people are striving to get to, it's not easy. You really do have to put in the work from a young age, from all perspective, from a nutritional perspective, physical perspective, life, mindset. So it's not something that you can just wake up and say, you know what, I'm tall, I'm this, I want to be NBA. You really do have to work for it, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. So I go overseas and I'll do clinics, China, Philippines, Israel. I've been to several countries and I do these clinics, and I always get like some college players that'll come up to me and they're like, you know, I started playing 4 years ago, 6 years ago, whatever. They're good for their country. And they're like, you think I can make the NBA? And I watch them play. I'm like, man, I don't think you understand just how good NBA players are. And then they go, oh, okay, well, but I can make the G League, right? I can make the minors. And I'm like, no, you don't understand how good the G League is.
Yeah.
Like even the G League is just incredible players. So yeah, if that is the goal, you have to go all in from a very, very young age. Yeah. Even if you're going to have the genetics to be 7 foot, I think it's like less than 10% of 7 footers make it to the NBA. So even if you have the genetics, it's still extremely difficult to make it. So yeah, it's got to become a full-time job. And like you said, it's got to be a well-rounded grind. Like you can't just go do skills training and play. That might have got you by in the 80s or the 90s, but it's a different game now. It's more competitive than ever. And so from a young age, it's got to be strength and conditioning. It's got to be nutrition. It's got to be training your brain. Anything that you can do to get that step up on your competition, you got to do it.
100%. All right. Now that we've focused on the athlete, I want to move on to you and your system and your business. How did you get so many, you know, what was the rise of your success? I know you spoke about Instagram and YouTube, but look, now in 2019, I mean, we're bombarded with, you know, skills videos. Like, do you think somebody can still take the same journey as what you did and put out content and, you know, make it in their field?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think this stuff is just getting started. Like when I got into it, I didn't know anybody making a full-time living off of basketball strength and conditioning. Mm-hmm. There's really almost nobody that I know of. Maybe there's a couple skills trainers that were making a living, but not like making a good, comfortable living. And now I've been able to mentor a lot of trainers who are making a great living for themselves just off basketball strength and conditioning. So I think this is just the start. I think trainers are starting to realize how many athletes we can actually reach. And then your priorities have to follow. So a lot of people realize that, and then they go right back to just training in person and not taking videos and not posting on social media. You got to realize the power of it, and then you got to harness that, and you got to go all in. And you need to do a video or a picture or deliver some type of content just about every single day. Because like you said, there's millions of trainers out there who are trying to do the same thing. So how are you going to separate yourself? Well, you got to get consistent. You got to take down data, right? Like you got to figure out what stuff is working. So when you post every day, that's the luxury you have, is now you have a bigger sample size. You know, okay, this type of content works. This type of content doesn't work. Find out what works and then scale it. Go all in on that. You can still, even right now with a million trainers on Instagram, you can still really blow up if you're willing to put out good content and you're willing to do it consistently. And the only other piece of advice there would be, you got to have some sort of unique angle. So the problem that I see is people just look at like what I'm doing, or like we just talked about DJ, what DJ's doing, and they go, okay, I'm going to do that. And then they take the same exact approach and the same delivery style and the same content style. It's like, you're never going to be better than me at being me. So go be you and take a unique approach and come up with a different delivery style. Come up with a unique way to deliver the content. And that's what's going to catch people's eye, because we get so used to on social media, we get bored with stuff. And when you deliver something in the same way over and over again, after a couple months, people are like, look, I just want something new. So now another trainer pops up with this super unique delivery style, teaching different stuff. There's no reason why they can't completely blow up and get hundreds of thousands of followers.
So do you think it's about quality as well? Because a lot of people don't have the Gary V setup where they've got a videographer, a cinematographer, someone to edit everything. Do you think if you can't work with that, just get a friend, get a cell phone, and just produce your content?
Yes, that's the key. Yeah. Get a cell phone and you're good. Like that's the beauty of it. And actually, it's the opposite. Like with the Instagram, I don't know about YouTube. I think quality matters a little bit. Instagram is the opposite. I get almost probably close to twice the views when I do it on my cell phone compared to when I have my videographer film and edit it. So Instagram has something with their algorithm. I don't know how they do it, but the higher quality and the more professionally edited, the lower the views are going to be. And I think it's just because they want to show their whole thing is like, they want you to see your friends and your family's post. They don't want you to see a bunch of business. They don't want you to be sold anything in their feed. And so I think when you put together these highly edited videos, sometimes it just feels like it's not organic, and that's just not what Instagram is about. So a lot of times, like if you can't afford that, and even me, like I have a full-time videographer, a full-time editor, but even still, a lot of my videos I'll just do with my cell phone, just because I still want to keep that organic side of it. So yeah, literally, if you're starting up, get a cell phone, get a friend to film you, film a bunch of content, go into the gym on a Sunday and film 7 videos. And then now you don't got to worry about it day to day. You got 7 videos to pull from, 1 per day. You're good to go. And when I started, I didn't even have a friend who would sit there and film me, because I didn't, other than my fiance, nobody else really had that vision of where I was going to take this. So at the time when I started, it was like, wait, you want me to film you doing a ball handling drill? Like, how weird is that? So I would literally, if my fiance wasn't there, I would literally just set up my phone. Like I would prop up a cone and I would just prop it up against that cone. And then I would go do the drill and I would just hope I was in the frame. And then afterwards I would just edit it on iMovie on my phone. and, you know, put a song behind it and put it out. So yeah, literally there is no excuse to not be posting content on Instagram every day. You do not need a videographer.
So what was the pivotal moment of your success? Like, when did you, you know, because you've got to, you can't, it's enough just to put out content. That's great. But let's just say you get an influx of people following you. Like, where it's, you've got to have a unique offer. You've got to have like, so great, we've landed on your page. We've landed here. Do I have to see you in person? Like, the good thing with you is you've got an online program where people all over the world can join in. But if someone from Pakistan is going to see you, they can't fly and train with you directly. So I think having something to back it up as well, where people can buy in, is also a big thing.
That's huge. Yeah. So that was something that I did well, I think in like 2013 or 14 is when I came out with my first online vertical jump program. And then I also had a ball handling program. And recently in the past year, I just came out with the Vert Code. So that's my newest vertical program. But by having that program, like you said, like anybody around the world can sign up with you and train with you for, you know, several years. Most of our clients stay with us for 2-3 years. So yeah, that's huge. And then that allows you to monetize, because yeah, you can only see so many people in person. Mm-hmm. And especially, like, why would you go all in on social media and reach all these people around the world and then never actually be able to help them and monetize? So yeah, that's a huge thing. And then it allows you to go all in even harder when you have that program, because when you do a post, you get X amount of people to click on your website. And then from that amount, you get X amount to sign up your program. And then you sit there and you do the calculations and you go, oh, okay, so per post, I make this amount of money. So then it's like, well, this is basically the full-time job. You have that realization. And so then it's easier to do it every single day. It's hard to do it when you don't see the return. So there's a lot of people with millions of followers who don't get the financial return. And so then it becomes a tough thing of like, they got to continuously come up with content. But when you have a product, then that becomes your full-time job and you're monetizing off of it. So yeah, you got to have some sort of offer for people all around the world.
100%. And then there's your business model. So what was the, like, what was the pivotal moment of your career where you landed your first NBA player?
So my first NBA player was Malcolm Lee. He played at UCLA and then he got drafted to the Minnesota Timberwolves, and he had had a knee surgery and a hip surgery in the same year. And he had been rehabbing. I didn't know him at this time when he got hurt. He had been rehabbing. He's gone to all the specialists, trainers, strength and conditioning coaches. It was a few years, I think, after his surgery, and he still didn't get his explosiveness back. He found me on Instagram, and he just moved out to Arizona for the summer. And he put on like 7 inches on his vertical. He got back to where he was before. He got his quickness back. He was feeling good. And he got back into the NBA. He got back to play with the 76ers after that summer with me. And so that was huge, because the NBA circles are very small. So once he made that transformation, he started telling people. And so his friends from the NBA started coming in. So that was my first big thing. I just needed one person to trust me, and it was him. Luckily, for him, it was a place of probably desperation, where he's been trying to get back for so long and nothing he's doing is helping him. And so that's what made him trust me, is he's like, man, I watch this guy's social media posts every day. He's always talking about the science. Why not give him a shot? And so he came out and we got great results. So yeah, you really just need that one person to trust you. We always assume that like you're going to go from 0 to 100. And when we don't get the clients we want or the success we want, we get super frustrated with ourselves. But it's like, hey, all you need is one. And you don't know when that one is going to happen. That one might come in next week, and you got to go all in, and you got to treat that like it's the big time, and show them that you can provide a very quality service. And from there, you know, it can absolutely blow up. So you never know when you're going to get that big shot.
Yeah, I love what you said, because there's a lot of people who, you know, fresh out of college or self-taught, whatever it is, and then they don't want to do the groundwork. They don't want to work with the amateurs. They don't want to work with the youth and then build up. They just want to go straight from college to, I want to be working with the MBA. And it's like, well, no, there's some levels that you need to hit before you get there.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's I would recommend doing that. It's going to be more beneficial for you if you learn how to train kids first, because the attention to detail in training kids is much, much higher than training with the NBA players. With the NBA players, you can kind of mess up here and there, and they figure it out because they're such good athletes. Mm-hmm. But like with a youth athlete, if you do a bad job on your demo, they're not going to figure it out. Right? An NBA player will self-organize his body. A youth player won't do that. And so you got to get really, really good at coaching when you're training these youth athletes. And that just makes you better as a coach. So then when you do get into training the higher level professional athletes, you're a much better coach by that time.
So what do you think are some of the mistakes that athletes make, whether they're NBA players or whether they're juniors? What do you think are the biggest mistakes that they're making?
The biggest mistake is nutrition. In basketball, it's just so bad. Even at the highest levels, guys are really just eating microwave pizzas. They're eating fast food. And the big thing is it's like I said, with their body type, they can get away with it and not notice drastic effects. They don't realize the little effects on their health and their performance that it's making. And they also don't realize like how good they could be if they truly locked in. So from a strength, from an athleticism, from an injury prevention standpoint, that nutrition is so big. I would say probably less than 5% of guys that I've ever worked with have truly had a good diet. The other 95%, it's fast food, it's microwave pizzas. They're just not getting the quality nutrients that they need. And the problem is they were never educated on it, which you would think that by the time you get to the NBA, you know everything, but these guys don't know a lot of times the difference between a protein, a fat, and a carb. And, you know, we don't learn this in school. So it's like, where are we going to learn it? And then they go one and done in college. And it's not necessarily enough time for the information to stick. And so they get to the NBA and they still have no idea what is good and what is bad. So for me, when we make nutritional changes, it's just the basics. It's just, hey, could you eat fish and sweet potato and broccoli? You know, we don't have to get too advanced with the nutritional strategies. It's just, hey, pick up this and put down this, and you're probably going to notice the difference. And after a couple of weeks, they feel like it's such a big game changer for them that usually they'll stick for life.
Yeah, I think that coming from an energy perspective rather than an aesthetic perspective, rather than attacking it, like, because if a lot of them are eating fat and sugar and they're saying, well, I still look good. It's like, well, let's not focus on the way you look. Let's focus on what it's doing to your internal health.
Sure.
Now, this question's for coaches, no matter if they're basketball coaches, whatever coach. What do you think makes an amazing coach? I've been reading up a lot lately about Phil Jackson, and I just love his story. So what do you think makes a brilliant coach?
I think buy-in is huge. I've always felt like you have to, the player has to know that you care, and that's number one. When the player knows that you care, and you're there for them sort of at an emotional level, I think that's when you can really start to implement your knowledge. You know, you see the coaches who are like always raising their voice and always yelling and super intense. That might have its place, but for the most part, I think if you have to raise your voice to get somebody's attention, you probably don't have their respect. And that's the thing that I've probably never yelled at a player. I'll talk in a normal voice. I'll usually talk very calm, but the words that I say resonate, and it's because I have their respect. So I never have to raise my voice. I never have to use any type of scare tactic of like, hey, if you're late, I'm going to make you run sprints. I've never been that type of coach. And growing up, looking at coaches and what we see in the media, you assume that you have to be that coach. You got to be like the hoorah, in their face, all that kind of stuff. But I got into it and I tried that route and it just didn't work for me. I didn't get the results. So I went back to just who I am as a person, who's just really overall pretty relaxed and very caring. Mm-hmm. And I really get I get the guy's respect right away. So yeah, I think that's a big thing. Like I don't necessarily do the motivational stuff, because by the time they get in a game, the motivation has to come internally, because mm-hmm. if they're on the road and they have 10,000 fans booing them, I'm not going to be there to say, come on, man, hold your follow through, get your follow through up, you play harder. I'm not going to be there to say that. And even if I was, they wouldn't be able to hear me. So how can that motivation come internally? Well, that starts in the off season. That starts in the gym of, I need you to get yourself up for this set. I'm not going to sit there and clap in your face and slap you on the back and get you ready, because then the motivation is coming externally and not intrinsically. So yeah, I think those are a few things that a good coach has, and then just a constant learner. You know, mm-hmm. there's so much information out now in the strength and conditioning side. There's a new study every day. So are you willing to actually stay up with that and read an hour to 2 hours every single day? Or are you going to fall off and get caught in the hamster wheel of showing up to your sessions and staying busy with your work? And, you know, that's the problem, is a lot of times on the independent side, you're running your business. And so you're so busy with that, that you forget to educate yourself. And so you're relying on what you used to know in college. Well, that information has changed by now. And so in a field that's so rapidly evolving, that has to be number one, is educating yourself. So if that means you take one or two less sessions and you make less money so that you can spend more time studying, you have to do it. So that's like, I set up my schedule so that in the NBA season for that 6 or 7 months, I don't do anything. I don't really take any clinics. I don't really do much, so that I can just spend that 6 months studying. We mm-hmm. run studies at our gym. I catch up on all of the studies that I've missed on that year. And I just focus on educating myself, and that helps me become a better trainer. So I think that's probably the number one thing that people don't do, is they don't dedicate themselves to constant education.
Damn, I couldn't agree more. Now, last but not least, Paul, I'm going to ask you this question I ask everybody on the podcast, and that is, what's the one piece of advice that you could give to any athlete so they can better their performance?
Ooh, one piece of advice. Ooh, man.
Gotcha.
Let me think here. There's so many pieces of advice. Okay. Probably the one piece of advice that I would give is stay locked in through thick and thin. And athletes constantly are wavering. Their confidence is always up and down. You know, you're comparing yourself to your peers and you're going, oh, I'm better than that guy. And then you go to a bigger tournament and you realize, oh, these guys are all better than me. And so you're constantly measuring yourself. And when you do that, you're either becoming cocky because you're measuring yourself to players that are lesser than you, or you're decreasing your confidence and killing your self-esteem by measuring yourself up against players that are better than you. And so from a mental standpoint, you're all over the place. And that's when a lot of guys quit, even if they have the potential. They see somebody that's that much better than them, and their confidence isn't there. And so they either stop playing, or they start thinking about, okay, well, maybe I'll just play on the side here and there, but I got to go focus on something else. And they don't go all in, and it's all because they're comparing themselves to other people when they should just be trying to get better every single day. So when you stay locked in and you stay focused on your goals, you can really take it a long ways, and you just stay consistent. And the reason I said through thick and thin is because you're going to have those days where you're going to think, there's no way I'm going to make it in this in basketball. And you got to stay locked in. And that's probably the number one piece of advice, is just stay locked in through thick and thin.
I absolutely love it, Paul. Thank you so much. Your passion, your intelligence is shining through, and I can see exactly where you are and why you're there. And I hope every single person can see that as well. And I know that they will through this episode. Please tell us where we can find out more about your system, your online work, and where we can find more about you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So pjfperformance.net is our website. We have all of our online training programs on there. So the VERT code, we have a bodyweight VERT code. So that's for athletes that don't have access to a gym, or you're just getting into it. And all you need is bodyweight. And then the more advanced version is VERT code elite. So that requires a gym. That's a full year program. Your typical LA Fitness gym works there. That's for more of the advanced athlete. Social media is at PJF Performance. So I do Instagram and YouTube. Both of them are under at PJF Performance. And then we have our podcast. We do one podcast a week, and that is the PJF Performance podcast. So that's on YouTube and Apple Podcasts and Spotify and SoundCloud.
I love it. I'm going to link everything. Thanks so much, Paul.
Awesome. I appreciate it.